FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's November 29th, 2017. The year is kind of quickly coming to a conclusion. Hopefully a happy one for all. But what's going on with the metals markets, the currency markets, all of that good stuff? Well, when I really want a good answer, I always think of my friend at tfmetalsreport.com. I'm talking about Craig Hemke, a.k.a. Turd Ferguson. Craig, it's great to have you back on.
Kerry, it's always fun to visit. Thanks for the invite.
Hey, so gold and silver, they've just been in this trading range where, like, nothing is happening. It's like watching paint dry, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been pretty remarkable, especially for the last month, to see how things have just gone sideways. In fact, if you look at the mining sector, the mining stocks on the New York Stock Exchange, on the NASDAQ, and in Toronto, they have gone sideways for about, I think it's now 24 days in a very tight range, which is extraordinarily unusual if you look back over history. And so it's a very interesting time to be watching this stuff. You know, if anything, Kerry, the world here in 2017, the investing world at least, the financial world, is now so utterly dominated and controlled by computer trading, pre-programmed really in a large extent. You know, these algorithms are written to respond and either buy stocks, sell stocks, buy gold, you know, or sell gold, buy Forex, sell Forex, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're all written in advance, and they key off each other, they key off the headlines, and there's so little human involvement anymore that it boggles the imagination boggles the mind when you see some of these moves, but that is what it is. And gosh, you can watch or almost predict really on a daily basis which way many of these markets are going to go, just if you can then just simply predict some of these key inputs that drive those algo decisions. It's not, these markets aren't what they used to be, that's for sure. And it simplifies things, but it also confounds you at the same time.
Hey, so, you know, when you talk about that, you're up against algorithms and all that. What is really happening here? Why is nothing happening? What's your take on it?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to really summarize it all into a neat answer. You know, it's like we look at volatility indices, whether it's on the stock market or the bond market or the gold market or whatever, and they're all at record lows. And you look at that and you think, well, how can that be with all that's going on in the world? And again, it all gets back to the fact that, you know, the extent to which things are controlled, managed, manipulated, however you want to put it, or it's just simply this algo computer control that has taken a lot of the emotion, but also logic out of these markets. It's like today, and we're recording this, as you said, here on Thursday, and you can see that gold is down significantly. And the reason for that is that the primary driver of that COMEX gold price these days is one simple algo input, and that's the Forex pair of the U.S. dollar versus the Japanese yen. And if the U.S. dollar, Japanese yen, you'll see it quoted as USDJPY on Bloomberg and on CNBC. If that's going up, then gold is going down. And the inverse is true. If that goes down, gold's going up. In fact, they do it on a nanosecond basis. You can see big moves in the dollar yen, and within a couple of seconds, you'll see opposite moves in gold. And so, and the dollar yen is a big driver of whether the machines buy the stock market as well, by the stock S&P futures, things like that. And so it gets to the point where, you know, it doesn't really matter what the headlines are. I mean, the news out of North Korea yesterday was horrible.
Gold goes down, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's because the dollar yen went up on a short-term basis because of comments that are being made today by Yellen in front of Congress and the prospect of some tax cuts going through Congress this month. That has driven the dollar yen up a point from 111 to 112. That should be good for about $10 or $12 down in gold. And that's exactly what gold is down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and Kerry, we joke about how, you know, God, they could light off a nuclear bomb in Times Square and stock market would probably go up. You know, initially there might be some selling if that were to happen. But if that caused this dollar yen to go up, then yeah, eventually the robots would take over and stocks would rebound and probably end up green on the day. I mean, and that sounds ludicrous.
Yeah.
But that's seriously the world that we live in.
Amazing. Amazing. And you just see that the markets are really divorced in a lot of respects from what we would call fundamentals, or what we used to call fundamentals, right?
Right. Well, and because, again, human beings making rational decisions take fundamentals into account. You know, it used to be back, I mean, when I first became a stockbroker back in 1990, right, we had to learn all about PE ratios, you know, and stuff like that.
How mundane.
None of that crap matters anymore, Kerry. It just doesn't. And it's like today, there are still people that purport themselves to be analysts in the precious metal space. And they talk about physical demand driving price, or they talk about the difference between the spot price and the futures price is somehow driving the price. And none of that matters. It might have mattered 10 years ago or 20 years ago, but in 2017, it doesn't amount to a hill of beans. It really doesn't. And so when we talk about the gold price being kind of stuck in limbo this year, going up and going down, at the end of the day, Kerry, the reason that is the case is because that dollar yen pair that we've talked about here has also been stuck in limbo, going up and going down. And there are a lot of people that think, oh, that's crazy. That sounds simple. But I invite anybody to do their own research and check it out and start following the stuff on a daily basis, and you'll quickly see that I'm right.
So your opinion is, because you don't want to confuse basically an event that's independent or coincidental with causation. So the underlying causation here, though, is the algorithms. Do I have that right?
Yes. Here's what I think, Kerry. I was, not that this is some reason to like trumpet how smart we are at my side or anything like that, but I really was, and by happenstance, I discovered this. I really was the first person to notice this and figure this out a little over 3 years ago, that these algorithms are in play and that's what drives the price. And the world has slowly caught on to this. And now you see this, you know, people talking about this all over the internet, that this dollar yen relationship is what drives the COMEX gold price. What does it mean, and why is it in place? I have my theory on that, and I'll be happy to speculate on that and how it works if you want me to.
Yeah, please.
When you look at the futures markets in general, they were devised decades ago as a way for producers of a certain commodity to manage the risk of the price of that commodity, right? I mean, whether it was soybeans or corn or gold or whatever.
Right.
They could sell forward through an agent, you know, a bank of some kind. They can sell forward their future production on an exchange like the Chicago Board of Trade or whatever, and then take in the opposite side of that trade were the speculators. Mm-hmm. Well, that's how initially, and really up until about 2002 or three, the bullion banks had a large amount of gold and silver that was sold forward, and they were agents for these mining companies. Well, as we went through that first decade of this century and then into the last 6 or 7 years, that hedging by mining companies has become almost non-existent. The last numbers we've had, maybe somewhere between 7 and 10 million ounces of global gold production is actually sold forward and hedged. Now, that may sound like a lot, but it's not. In total COMEX contracts, 10 million ounces is about 100,000 contracts.
Yeah, not a heck of a lot. But
we know from the CFTC data that the big bullion banks are routinely short 2 or 3 times that amount. Mm-hmm. And so what they then do, the bullion banks are basically making a market and taking kind of a naked short side in issuing contracts that are no longer backed by hedge future production. They're just taking the risk of being short and allowing the speculators the risk of being long, and they're right, consistently fleecing and managing the market and fleecing those speculators, and they make pretty good money in doing it. But at the end of the day, though, why they have this algo attachment, that I think the banks obviously don't like that risk. They don't like the risk of being massively short all of this gold and all of this silver on the COMEX. And so what they've done is they've written these algorithm programs, these high frequency trading algorithm programs that link the price of gold to this dollar yen. And the reason they do that is because it's very difficult for them to fully hedge the risk that they have in being short gold by making these markets. It's very hard for them to hedge that risk in gold alone. And so if you can then in design algorithms and put them in place that link gold with the yen, essentially turning gold into the yen for all intents and purposes, well, then heck, you can hedge your short gold in the much deeper pool of Forex in the dollar yen. Right. I mean, Forex trades $6-7 trillion a day, dollar yen being about the most active pair. And so anyway, I think that's why you talk about causation. I think my best theory that I have for all of this, because obviously it's there, anybody can see the correlation. I think causation is the banks themselves have written these programs and instituted them to do, and they've done so so that they can manage their risk of being, you know, massively short metal. And they've taken on that risk so that they can make a market in these futures contracts.
It's amazing that they could come up with this. I can't say I'm shocked. I mean, does anything shock you at this point, Craig?
No, not really. I've seen a lot in the time that we've been doing this, which is now more than 7 years. Yeah, and it is interesting this way things have changed, even just in the last couple of years, how blatant it's gotten in terms of what really is a control of the markets by the central bankers and then their primary dealer, you know, big bank trading desks and hedge funds. You know, we talk about the stock market, and we mentioned earlier how, you know, as long as the dollar yen is going up, that's going to prompt these machines to buy stock futures.
Right.
And that in itself is a way that the central banks can stabilize asset prices, stock prices, and keep them going higher. Because everybody looks at it and goes, well, how does it keep going higher? And how come we haven't had a correction more than 1%? Right?
It's all they care about, right, is stock prices.
Right.
Nothing else matters.
And it's this amazing time we've had, historic, really, of no corrections, just constantly moving up. Well, if some dope like me out here in the middle of nowhere can figure this out, I can assure you the central bankers have figured this out. And they know that if they can drive these high-frequency trading machines to do the heavy lifting for them, to buy stock futures day after day after day, if they can drive them to do that by controlling some of the inputs that these algorithms watch, then they can keep the stock market afloat quite consistently like they have. And again, the key inputs that in buying stocks that the machines look at are that dollar yen, the same dollar yen in things like the VIX index. So if you're a central banker from the Bank of Japan or the Swiss National Bank or the Fed or wherever, and you'd like to see the stock market continue to keep going up, well, then all you have to do is make the dollar yen move a certain way, make the VIX move a certain way, and the high-frequency trading machines from all these hedge funds and the like will do all the heavy lifting for you. This is kind of a heavy, podcast.
It's really heavy.
And a long discussion. But what we're getting at, Kerry, is that people sense that there's something unusual going on. How can the stock market go up every day? You know, and how come gold's not responding and all that kind of stuff? And at the end of the day, it's because these markets are almost entirely controlled now by a computer. And if the powers that be, whatever you want to call them, can get the computers to do what they want them to do, then you get this result that we see every day. And that's what's happening.
So is there going to be a day here, Craig, where somebody, whether it's an enemy of the country or whomever, a hacker, actually gets the better of their computers and sends this market into a free fall and breaks up all their great plans, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're looking at here.
Yeah. In terms of stocks, the stock market. That's the risk, right? That somehow the machines get unplugged, if you will, and you get into the, you know, it works the opposite way. You take your chart of the stock market going straight up and you flip it over and all of a sudden it's going straight down. In terms of gold, the big challenge, if I'm right about the bullion banks instituting these algorithm programs to link the price, what you're getting is a false price, right? You're not getting a price based off a physical exchange. You're getting a price, a paper derived, electronically derived price. The bullion banks have the obligation, mainly in London, of feeding the global demand for physical gold at that paper derived price.
Right.
That will continue as long as there's physical metal for them to feed into that paper derived price. So this scheme, you know, and this gold not going anywhere because the dollar yen isn't going anywhere and the bank's managing the risk and all that kind of stuff, it will continue too until the day comes when these banks, the bullion banks, can no longer source enough physical metal to keep the scheme afloat. And that whole system is essentially a confidence scheme, you know, where it's, well, you know, my metal, my, I own gold. Do you do? Oh yeah, it's in this Swiss account, or it's in the GLD, you know, or whatever. And, and these people, like big hedge funds like Dalio and Druckenmiller and these guys that claim for themselves and claim for their customers that they own gold, when really they own gold exposure. When the day comes that the bullion banks are unable to fulfill orders and make turn out unallocated gold into allocated gold and actually fill physical orders in size at this paper derived price, that's when this whole scheme will finally fall apart. But I mean, we've been talking about that now for a couple of years. It didn't happen in 2012. It didn't happen in 2015, and it ain't happening this year. So, I like to think that day's still coming, but I mean, we're still just kind of sitting here waiting and collecting metal at these prices until it does.
So how do cryptocurrencies fit into this scheme here, Craig?
You know, it's interesting, Kerry. There are a lot of gold people that, you know, are just hate cryptocurrencies because they think it's siphoning off interest and dollars and all that kind of stuff that should be going into gold. And I think a lot of them are just frankly bitter because we've all known about Bitcoin forever and nobody ever bought any because they didn't think it was comparable and all that stuff. And now you look at Bitcoin, it's $11,000 and that makes people angry, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm lucky enough that I do own some. And so maybe that softened my edge a little bit about it. I think there's definitely a place for it. And I think, frankly, and I've said this really since I first started buying Bitcoin a year and a half ago, I think they're complementary. It's two sides essentially of the same coin, no pun intended. And what we're doing in having Bitcoin explode the way it is, I mean, it's not just millennials that are buying it now. I mean, it's hedge funds. It's
big business.
It's big institutions, it's people all around the world. And the real lesson in Bitcoin that is being taught is that money is not just simply a dollar bill or a euro, you know, or a yen. Money doesn't have to be constantly devalued by your central banker, basically making your savings and your accumulated hard work more worthless by the day.
Right.
Money instead can go up in value as you own it. And I think that lesson eventually lifts all boats, if you will, because it also then teaches you, well, if Bitcoin is better than the dollar, well, what else is better than the dollar? Oh, yeah, this gold, and silver. That's been money for millennia. And so from an education standpoint, an awareness standpoint, I think it's very good ultimately for gold and silver. Because, again, at the end of the day, the world recognizes gold and silver as money, as the ultimate store of value, as the ultimate hard asset, right, protector of wealth, you know, anchor for a system, not Bitcoin. And that we're heading in that direction. I think a rising Bitcoin just kind of really does help accelerate that whole process.
A rising Bitcoin lifts all boats, eh?
Yeah, I'll take it.
Well, hasn't yet, but I think that you're onto something here. Craig, it's always interesting speaking with you. You're on the cutting edge of this stuff. Cryptocurrencies, nothing to fear from, but they might not be the savior of humanity either. They're subject to all the foibles of humanity that we've seen over the millennia, and Bitcoin's just not a cure to stupidity.
Yeah. And Kerry, I would add to that, besides the education part, let's say some of these folks are, I mean, Bitcoin's gone from 1,000 to 11,000 in the last, 11, 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
Well, heck, it's a smaller percentage basis for it to go from 11,000 to 100,000 in the next 11 months, right?
Yeah.
So let's say it does. And you're somebody that's just now learning, you know, that it's smart to be out of dollars. And you've got now a couple hundred thousand in Bitcoin that you'd like to diversify. Well, what are you going to do? Turn it back into dollars? I mean, there's going to be a significant part of that population that takes that and buys themselves some physical gold. And if acquisition and holding of physical gold is what ultimately breaks the banker system of derivative pricing,
so be it.
Yeah. I mean, this could be the driver that does it. So I'm all for it. Yeah, let's go. Let's drive it to $1 million for a Bitcoin. That'd work too.
Hey, I can live with that. So, and it's very possible, but Bitcoin isn't yet money. Important
right.
thing because if nothing else, we've got Gresham's law taking place where the bad money is driving out the good money. Not that the good money was ever there, but would you go buy a car using Bitcoin today when you think that it might go up 50% in the next month?
That's
You'd
right.
be insane to do it. So you're going to hoard your Bitcoin. And when you do need to do stuff, you'll take on debt or use your dollars. you're not going to use your Bitcoin, just like you wouldn't use your gold. And that's what I think the biggest obstacle is. Bitcoin being a currency, a medium of exchange, I think it is a victim of its own success on that score. How much stuff is really being purchased with Bitcoin? I think most of what's happening is trading, people buying and selling. And that, you know, it's like if you were buying and selling dollars, but you couldn't buy anything with them, or you didn't want to, would the dollar be a currency then?
Yeah. No, those are excellent points, Kerry. No doubt about it.
So that's my skepticism with it. And then you look at the chart, Craig. You're a student of markets. When you look at how that chart's gone up, and yes, I know it's the whole world, there's always a reason why the latest bubble isn't a bubble, right? There's always rationalizations. And I feel like we're in the rationalization stage. Well, it's international. Well, nobody trusts fiat currencies, and on, reasons why this time is different. But this time never is different.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to it, Kerry, and we're now getting to where there's going to be some, let's call it synthetic Bitcoin, kind of like all the forms of synthetic gold that have been created, almost like alchemy, right? Uh-huh. If I can convince you that your futures contract or your GLD shares are just as the same thing as owning gold, well, then we've created more gold, right?
Sure.
And that's the supply dynamic of Bitcoin that has been under control thus far. And that's why I bought it first 18 months ago.
Yeah.
Was the amount of Bitcoin that can be mined gets cut in half every 18 months, something like that. And I thought, well, heck, if future demand is only going to grow while future supply is going to be going down, how does that not work, right?
Yeah.
I think a real threat to this exponential growth that it's had, though, is, you know, the bankers. You know, suddenly there's going to be a futures contract on the NASDAQ and a futures options contract that trades on the CME and all that synthetic Bitcoin that they're going to try to come up with. That might eventually at least slow it down some.
Yeah, well, or it might make it go higher.
Yeah, who knows?
There's two sides to manipulation. When it goes higher and then all of a sudden everybody just jumps on the bandwagon, or when it goes higher only to make it crash.
Yeah.
Because it's at an unsustainable level. I don't know which it is yet, but I do know that I'm a student of bubbles, and there's been numerous bubbles. There's a great site called thebubblebubble.com, maintained by this columnist from Forbes magazine, and it studies every single bubble that's ever occurred in, you know, going back to tulip mania.
Yeah.
And, you know, the problem is you don't know you're in a mania until it ends.
Yeah.
And all
that's
of a
right.
sudden it's like, how could I have been so stupid? Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So bubble, that remains to be seen. And just because you're in a bubble doesn't mean it can't sustain itself for a while either. So I guess we're just going to find out in the next few months, next year or so, what the real story is. But if Bitcoin were to crash and you had a flight of funds out of it, where would that money go?
That's right. That's right. And I think from as you said, being a kind of a student of markets, the thing I think people would want to watch, at least for an intermediate term trend, is as Bitcoin has gone through the year, it's made a series of higher highs, right? And a series of higher lows as it's pulled back.
Yeah.
When that trend breaks and all of a sudden you get a lower low and a lower high on the chart, that might be your tell that it's, you know, time to take a little money off the table for a while.
Yeah, that could well be the case. But things happen so fast in Bitcoin, it's like mosquito years.
That's true, too. You know,
so a crash, the crashes happen. And then before you know it, the crash is over. And then what?
Yeah. It's going to be, it all sets us up for what's going to be a pretty wild and volatile 2018, Kerry. I mean, between the geopolitics and the politics and everything else. Oh, boy. I think we've got quite a year ahead of us.
I totally agree with you. Hey, well, anyway, Craig, we find you at tfmetalsreport.com, and we'll always have a link to it in the show notes to this interview. Find us, email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. Be part of the show. We're almost up to date on the emails. I think I'm 42 behind, believe it or not. The Twitter feed's at Kerry Lutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Craig, always a pleasure, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Kerry. Have a great rest of your year, and look forward to talking to you in 2018.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.